Blog Talk Radio.
Chicago's Black Business Network exists to assist you, the individual business owner, in your efforts to reach the next level of service and growth. We have some powerful resources in Chicago. Open the door to opportunity at chicagosblackbusinessnetwork.com. Enter. There is no charge. At chicagosblackbusinessnetwork.com, we are here to network. Are you? Join us today and touch the world. Hundreds of members are waiting to connect. Chicago's Black Business Network is dedicated to the legacy of the late Mayor Harold Washington. Let us not forget his service to the city of Chicago.
Got to find some woman.
No man stands alone in the Armageddon. Should I have faith in the promised land? Down in Mount Zion, gone too soon. You gone too soon. Godfather, you gone too soon. You gone too soon. You gone too soon. Godfather, you gone too soon. You gone too soon. Godfather, you gone too soon.
Welcome to Chicago's Black Business Network on Blog Talk Radio for Tuesday, November 17, 2009. This is your host, Sonia Perdue. CBBN on Blog Talk Radio is a promotional tool for the members of Chicago's Black Business Network.com. Currently, our organization has more than 500 members, and this is where our members come to share information about their products, services with you, the Blog Talk Radio audience, and the world. After the opening announcement, you are listening to Gone Too Soon, performed by Richie Stevens, for the 50th anniversary CD, which is dedicated to reggae prince Dennis Brown. We are also dedicating that song to our late and great Mayor Harold Washington. This show and our website are both dedicated to Mayor Harold Washington. You know, every week we say something about Harold Washington. This is our way of giving respect to his memory and all that he did for the people of the city of Chicago. He was our mayor from 1983 until his death in 1987. According to reports, Mayor Washington died of a heart attack on the morning of November 25th, 1987. It was estimated that 200,000 to half a million Chicagoans passed by Harold Washington's open casket in City Hall. CBBN is dedicated to keeping his name up front and on the minds of the people of this city. If you know of any memorials that are being held for Harold Washington this month, please send us an email here, and we will post the event on our websites. Our call-in number is 347-326-9477. Our call-in number is 347-326-9477. The chat room is open. Leave your company information and website links in the chat room. This is how we network. Press the number 1 if you would like to speak to one of our guests or if you just have a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Our theme and the focus for this evening is the story of the storyteller. We've invited a professional storyteller and publisher of children's books to join us on the show this evening. Professional storyteller Mama Edie Armstrong will share a story or two with us, I hope, and be about the business of the storyteller's business. Mama Edie is indeed a member of Chicago's Black Business Network.com. This show is for all of you who are involved in spoken or verbal entertainment or involved in the writing industry, because they're both connected. There may be some aspects to the business that has not occurred to you. We're always telling our members, don't reinvent the wheel. You don't have to. There's too much information out here, and there's too much bad information out here, and that's not what we want to do. We want to share this information with you, good information with you, and make your burden a little lighter. I know personally for myself, I go into so many ventures, just jump into it, and that's not the right learning experience. You don't have to live that type of experience. Mama Edie is a member of the National Storytelling Network and a chairperson for the National Membership Committee for the National Association of Black Storytellers, Inc., which is based in Baltimore. And we want her to share a little bit more information about that. So she has a lot to share with us this evening. Also joining us, we hope to have Mr. Robert L. Lewis is the co-owner of All Four Kids Enterprises in Homewood, Illinois. All Four Kids are the producers of the Urban Kids I Promise series stories for the urban kids, for our children. We want to take some time to speak with them about being in the publishing business and about specializing in children's books and CDs. So please call in with your questions. Our caller number is 347-326-9477. The chat room is open. Press 1 if you would like to speak to one of our guests. Also, we want you to know you can listen to us on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/CBBN, and I'll repeat that for you. You can listen to us live at www.blogtalkradio.com/CBBN. Before we start our guest interviews and go to the phone lines, we want to take a few moments to share some information with you about what's going on over at ChicagosBlackBusinessNetwork.com. First of all, please bring your children out to the filming of CAN TV, a CAN TV show, Channel 21, called Shaping Young Minds. Shaping Young Minds is filmed on Saturdays. This Saturday from noon to 3 p.m., Chicago's Black Business Network and all its members are invited on a first-come, first-served basis to watch the filming of this show. This will create some great memories for your children. It will open up their little minds. So, mommy and daddies, this is better than TV. Get them up, bungle them up, and bring them out to see the filming of this TV show. CBBN member Sylvia Frederick is now an associate producer for Shaping Young Minds, which is a show for and about black teens and young adults. You and your child can watch these young people as they host the show, do the interviews, and work behind the scenes of a TV production. Wendy Muhammad, who is the executive producer over there, has been doing an excellent job with this show for about the past 3 years. So I just want to say to our listeners, when we're speaking about our community, you hear all this negative things. Let's start pointing out the things that we as a people are doing for, in, about, and around our communities. Let's give our support to Ms. Muhammad for all that she's doing with our youth. Give her a hand. Seating is limited. This is this Saturday, November 21st. So please RSVP and contact the associate producer, Sylvia Frederick, as soon as possible. The number is 773-616-4297. The number is 773-616-4297, or you can contact her on ChicagosBlackBusinessNetwork.com. Don't just be on the outside of life looking in. Participate in life. That's all we're saying to you, and that's why we open up these opportunities for you. Come out and participate. Get up, put your clothes on, come out, participate. This Sunday over at the Woodson Library, I ran into Professor Williams, and I'm going to tell you a little bit more about Professor Williams. When I do, you'll know him. You've seen him all around. I was sitting there doing some edits on my book, which is scheduled for release January 1st. And the reason I'm telling you this is because I'm a master procrastinator. But this is my final date. This is really my final date. I'm really committed. Launch date, January 1st. It's nonfiction. Nothing complicated, but we'll see. Needless to say, that once he and I started talking, the editing process was pretty much finished. Almost everyone knows Professor Williams. If not, you should know him. You've probably seen him for years over at the DeSalvo Museum hosting various presentations and performances. But I told him I would mention his upcoming presentation at the Woodson Library on Sunday, November 22nd, this coming Sunday, between 2 p.m. and 5 p.m. I do speak the language, people. 2 p.m. and 5 p.m. I have so much on my mind, so much I want to get out. I should just say that Professor Williams will talk about everything that day. Because if you look at his flyers and you look at his background, you pretty much have to ask him, what is it that you don't do? It would be easier to ask him that. You know how some people are, their credentials are so long, you just want to say, well, what don't you do? Okay, so you do all of that. And that's the type of person Professor Williams is. For example, he has an ancient Egyptian art exhibit that he is preparing to move from venue to venue, a huge exhibit, and he doesn't want to leave it in one place. He wants to take it to different venues because everyone doesn't come to the Woodson Library. Everyone may not be downtown at the Harold Washington Library, so he wants to move it around. He's teaching a class, or he teaches classes at Chicago State University. His presentations include discussions such as the history of mathematics, history of astronomy, early African arts and crafts, African Moral Literature and Religion, The Black Church in America, The Beginning of Jurisprudence and Litigation, The Art of Healing, and on and on and on and on. And I see Professor Williams sing and dance a little bit too, so need to check that out. The presentations on Sunday will be from the African Holocaust to present times, discussions on President Obama's recent visit to Egypt, and the showing of excerpts from the movie Sankofa. I hope I'm saying that right, and I did see that film. That was a nice, very nice film, produced by a young woman over at Columbia College. It came out of there with some young people around her on that set. He'll tell us about his visit to various parts of Africa. There will be some music, poetry, dancing, just about a little of everything. It's a very nice way to spend a Sunday afternoon. I've attended a few of his presentations. I enjoyed them, but most importantly, I'm always learning something. So much. I'm always learning something. I'm always taking something away with me. And his presentations always serve as a reminder of me not to waste time. We've got so much to do, people. So I will see you at the Woodson Library, which is located in 95th and Halsted, this Sunday, November 22nd, 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. We'll post that event on our website shortly, too. I promised him that I would, and I will. Chicago's Black Business Network is growing stronger every day, and we want you to join us. Our call-in number is 347-326-9477. 347-326-9477. The chat room is open. I've been reminded, if you're listening on the Internet, you may want to switch to a media player because it's my understanding that the sound is much better than it is coming directly through Blog Talk Radio. So look at around the little instruction box. It asks you if you want to switch to a default player. And if you click it, it'll take it to the default player on your computer. So that may be another choice for you. And you can, if you're listening to us just on your phone, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/CBBN and listen to us. When you come on the line this evening, and it's something we've been asking everyone, we're going to ask you how you remember our late great Mayor Harold Washington. You're listening to Chicago's Black Business Network on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Sonia Perdue. We're going to make a few more announcements, and then we're going to go to the phone lines. But we'll be right back after this break.
A successful special event can be very challenging and stressful at times. Our staff of professionals organizes your event down to every last detail, no matter what size your special event may be.
Our creativity and attention to detail turns your ordinary party into an extraordinary event. At Andy Clyde's, world-class service for our clients is standard. We can provide travel arrangements, accommodations, event sites, caterers, florists, photographers, transportation, hairstylists, and makeup artists, favors, daily plans for guests, and pre-event information such as detailed maps, save-the-date cards, and invitations.
Being a custom event planner means that we cater to you. We are not locked in by guidelines passed down by corporate. It is our job to find the best possible way to present your event. We have been referred to as dream weavers because we listen to what you want and get it done.
Our specialties are the vacation packages. Visit our website at www.andyclides.net to see examples of what sets our services above others.
And remember, at Andy Clyde's, we are your
dream.
Distant thunder. it's just your old rock. Rolling away. I was a rock standing strong for you. There was nothing I wouldn't do. No matter the cost, I was ready to pay. Now you said I'm only holding you down, like some old rock you've been dragging around. Yes, I'm your rock, but I'm rolling away.
And this is your host, Sonia Perdue. You're listening to CBBN on Blog Talk Radio. We just heard from one of our supporters, Andy Clyde Dadnet, down in Atlanta, Georgia, and a member of CBBN. Give Andy Clyde Dadnet a call for all of your event needs worldwide. Also, that was The Rock sung by Etta James. That was for all of you who think that Miss Etta James only sung one song in her entire life. She will forever be known for the song At Last that was performed by Beyonce at President Obama's inaugural, but Ms. James has quite a history in music. Plus, I thought that our sponsor, Andy Clarinet, down there in Atlanta, Georgia, would enjoy that selection. We appreciate your support. If you are a Chicago's Black Business Network member and you would like to have your music featured on our show, simply send us an MP3 link. You can contact me on our site for details. Be patient with me, people. I'm having a few problems with my throat, but I'm going to do the best that I can. Our call-in number is 347-326-9477. The chat room is open. Our call-in number is 347-326-9477. To request that we open your mic, simply press the number 1, and we'll just say the last 4 digits of your telephone number and say what's on your mind this evening. We want to thank you for joining us. Our guests are on the line. Waiting for us, and we're going to go to them in a minute. But before our guests come on the line, I want to tell you how we connected, how we're all connected, and it's not by mistake. I was listening to The Invisible Man written by Ralph Allison in probably about the 1940s, maybe 1949, I believe. I'm not sure. But I was listening to the audio version performed by Joe Morton. And he does one hell of a job. I mean, and it's a long performance. They're like 15 audio CDs. And I've been trying off and on for the past 2, 3, 4 years to listen to this recording in its entirety. So I'll listen to it, take it back to the library, then I'll start it again, and I'll start it again. Finally, last one, I get down to CD number 15. Whew.
you've never heard anything like this before. But anyway, for those of you who don't know who Joe Morton is, he was in Terminator 2. He was the black man who discovered, whose discovery led to the invention of the Doomsday Bomb. And then he blows himself up to save the world. So that's Joe Morton. But he is a tremendous performer. Well, I finally got down to CD number 15. And behind CD number 15 was another CD entitled Urban Kids, Penny's Tale. Well, I put it in, and there was a woman telling a wonderful little story about the littlest dancer. I called the telephone number on the CD, and that's how I met Mr. Robert Lewis and his wife, who was our guest, tonight. The voice on the CD is his wife. Then, in speaking to Miss Edie about being a guest on our show, our second guest this evening, I mentioned the story that I just relayed to you, and Miss Edie told me that she, too, had performed the prologue for The Invisible Man for one of her courses. So when I spoke to her of this, she understood the profoundness of the piece. The writing is profound, and Joe Morton's performance also. So together, it's just mind-boggling. Well, Blog Talk listeners, that's how we came to be here tonight. It was because of The Invisible Man. This is what we're going to do. Let's go to the phone lines now, and we're going to go to our first guest who is joining us. Mr. Lewis, are you on the line?
Yes, Mr. Drew. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How you like that story, Mr. Lewis?
Oh, I think it's wonderful. You just brought me back to when I read Invisible Man. Man, many years ago.
It was a while, wasn't it? It's been a long time since I read it, but you really, have you ever listened to that performance to the CD?
No, I never listened to the CD.
Okay.
I read the book, and the book was fantastic.
If you ever had the time, I know our time is, you know, it's so short. We do it like 200 things, if you like me, Mr. Lewis, and if you're in business for yourself, we know you do it like 200 things. If you have a family and a business, it's just, it's overwhelming. But if you ever get a minute, listen to that performance, okay?
Okay.
But this is what we want to do. I'm thankful that you joined us, and I do appreciate it. Our guest this evening is Mr. Robert Earl Lewis, who, with his wife, is the co-owner of All Four Kids Enterprises, which is located in Homewood, Illinois. All Four Kids are the producers of the Urban Kids I Promise series, Stories for the Urban Kids. Now, what we want you to do, Mr. Lewis, is tell us a little bit about Urban Kids, and we'll go from there.
Okay. We came up with the term the Urban Kids because all our books are multicultural, and you find more multicultural people in an urban setting. So, therefore, we came up with the title Urban Kids. And it doesn't reflect on living in a particular urban setting. It's just that you'll find more diversity with children and people in an urban setting than you would in a rural. So that's how we came up with that. All our kids are multicultural, yes. There are 12 of them.
Okay. So in essence, it's for all kids.
It's for all kids.
That's what you're saying, all kids.
Right. All Four Kids, right.
All Four Kids. That's what it says, isn't it? That's great.
That's right.
Now tell us, how long have you had this particular business, and why did you start, how did you start this business, or why?
My wife has always had a desire to write. We both were educators, and while we were teaching and being in administration, et cetera, we didn't have the time because we were all involved in working with our children and our schools. But when we retired in January 2005, we came up with our business, All for Kid Enterprises, and my wife began to write books, and she's written 19 titles at this point. 12 of them are what we call Life Lessons for Kids, and they're teaching children skills by relating them to everyday experiences, and we make it meaningful. We try to get them to make a meaningful connection with the children to a life situation. For example, you mentioned one, Penny.
Okay.
Penny, they all have, the 12 books all have a tale to tell. And those are for my 12 kids. And Penny is one of them. She's the littlest dancer, and she's doing the best she can. And with, there are others that talk about being brave, trusting your parents, caring for others, sharing with others, being responsible, choosing good friends, leading a healthy life, all those types of things in that 12 book series called Life Lessons for Kids.
Okay. Are all of these tales named after your children, Mr. Lewis?
No. That
oh,
name
you're
that, no, I don't have 12 kids.
Oh, you don't have 12 kids? How did I get the impression that you had 12 children? Okay.
But no, it's named after
life lessons. Go ahead.
They're named after my wife and her siblings.
Oh, and her siblings?
Yes,
sir.
Uh-huh, there's 12 of them. 8 girls
oh,
and 4
okay.
boys.
I had the impression that you had 12 kids. Okay, that sounds great. That sounds great. Okay, life lessons. Give me an example of a life lesson for a child. It's from ages 2 to what your series is
what,
for?
Was it to 10?
2 to 10, okay.
Yeah, and we have audio CDs in each and every single last one of the book. All 19 books have audio CDs in them. The purpose is to reach children at an early age. Now, let me tell you about, for example, I mentioned Choosing Good Friends. The name of that particular book is Bullies Finish Last. Most children come in contact with a bully at some point in their life. Either they are a bully or they're the victim of a bully. So in Bobby's tale, he's a rough, tough young man, but he's not a bully, and he has a couple of friends like that. But the older kids are bullies, but then they like Bobby because Bobby's a rough, tough kid, so they're going to have him hang around with them. Of course, young boys look up to older boys, so Bobby was thrilled that these older boys would take him under their wings. So he started hanging around with them, and two of his friends began to hang around also. The first thing they noticed was that the other kids their age started avoiding them, and they're going, well, why are they avoiding us? But it was because of the bullies that they were hung around with. They looked up, and they saw these bullies taking kids' lunches and taking their money and all that kind of stuff like that, and they disapproved of it but didn't say anything until one day they looked up and they saw the bullies take this little boy's bike. And the little boy was crying and they laughing and running off with it. And so Bobby's two friends say, we can't take it anymore. If you want to be with them, you be with them, but you can't. But we're not going to be there anymore, so we're gone. We're out of here. So Bobby thought about it. Remember, Bobby's a tough kid. So he walked up to the bullies and told them, what you just did was wrong. You need to get that little boy his bike back. He wasn't doing anything to you. They told Bobby, shut up or we'll beat your butt. Although they didn't say butt in the book. We will beat you up. This is a children's book. But so Bobby left and he thought about it. And then one of his friends went home and talked to his father about what had happened. And so his father told him he did the right thing. And if Bobby comes around or not, that's up to Bobby. Bobby, in the meantime, well, the next day, let's go there. The two friends are walking down the street toward the park, and they see a hustle going on up ahead. And as they approach, they see that these boys beating up this one boy. All the little boys fighting back, but they're bigger and older and more of them. And a jogger happened to run through, and the boys ran off. Then they found out the boy that they were beating up was Bobby. And so they went to Bobby to find out what was going on and how was he and things like this. And he says, look, I thought about it. I went home and I told my parents. And my parents called their parents, and they had to get the bike back. And that's why they were jumping me today. And so they would say, oh, we're so sorry, you know, that this happened to us like that. And Bobby says, don't worry about it. I learned my lesson. Bullies finish last.
Well, that was a great story, Mr. Lewis. And I'm not 2 to 10, and I like that story. That was a great story. So each book has the CD, and your wife is on every CD?
Every CD except for one, and that's in our informational series. You know, we have 7 books that we call informational series, and they supplement social studies and science and things like that. And the latest book on that is Who Will Save Our Planet? And that's exposing children to the effects of global warming. My wife's son reads that one.
Oh, that's great. So that book has been published already?
Yes, all of them are out.
Okay. Now, are your books in the Chicago Public Schools, or do you sell them through your website? Your publisher, so how do you put your books out there?
Okay, they are in some Chicago public schools. You know, Chicago public schools have this strategic sourcing model, and you have to apply for that, and we're applying for it. You know, I'm a retired Chicago public school principal.
Okay.
And she's a retired public school. We have 55 years between us with Chicago public schools.
Okay, that's okay.
And so one of the reasons why we went into doing what we do, because we felt that our children come to school limited in the vocabulary. So our books are rich in vocabulary. We try to expose children at an early age to things they need to know. And when she, another reason for doing the tapes is so they have trouble reading, or if they can read well and want to read along with, it has that flexibility in the book. And then if it's a school that has it, they can put them in their listening centers. We try to think of everything, even down to the durability of the page. The page is thick and it's glossy, so it's hard to tear and hard to mark up. They are in some Chicago public schools. And we're trying to get into more of them at this point.
Okay. Do you have to go to the schools individually to get them in there? Or have one source to go through and they distribute them to the schools?
Through the strategic sourcing, they put your name on a list, and where the different principals, you know, will look up what's out there and approved by the board. And all of it, you still have to go to the school, but the schools are more apt to contact you if you're on the list. If you're not on the list, then you have to go to individual schools. You know, after you get your vendor number, and we have our vendor number, so we've been able to go into several schools, and we've been received warmly by the principals and reading coordinators and things at the schools that we've attended.
That's wonderful. But like anything, it's a process. It's not an easy process. You're dealing with a bureaucracy. There's a lot of writers out there who are presenting. There's probably a lot of people on the strategic sourcing list. So,
no, they aren't. It's not for minority book publishers.
Children's writers.
Right.
Tell me something, because, you know, I mean, I haven't been involved. I was approached way back in the 80s. I thought there was, and I don't know because I'm not involved in it, and I was asked to come on an interview, and I was asked to interview for a position that would go out and start presenting black books, black children books, to Chicago Public Schools, and I believe that was like 15, 20 years ago. And so you're saying to me right now there are not a lot of children publishers, black minority children publishers in the Chicago Public School with books. That's what you're saying to me.
Right. Mm. Minority publishers, no.
I'm going to go back and look and see what became of that. I know, well, of course, I remember who was going to interview me, a very prominent person. I'm going to go back and see what's going on with that, so I can get some more information out regarding strategic sourcing. Because in my mind, I see quite a few children books, but it may not be learning books. It may not be a lot of story books. Now, in my mind, I see a lot of, I mean, I'm not saying I see millions of children's books written by, you know, black people with little black children on the covers. I don't see millions of them, but I see quite a few when I go to these book reviews and, you know, book readings, you know, I run into them.
And there's a couple of things going on there.
Go ahead.
Because they did have a surge back, you see, about 20 years ago.
Okay.
That's before strategic sourcing.
Okay.
And we were able to get black authors and independently to come to our schools, and to and we would purchase their material. Now, since then, your major publishers trying to get some of that market start publishing books that were more geared toward black, had more black faces in it, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and so they took the decision making out of the individual schools, put it in a central source for decision making, which stopped the individual black principals, which would be majority in Chicago, from making that individual decision to put that book in there. Number one, so you got a central decision making source.
Yes,
that they have to go through number two.
But it has lightened up some now.
Oh, has it lightened up a little bit?
Yes, because there's been many complaints about it.
Okay.
And
so it's lightened up a little bit, Mr. Lewis. So in other words, you're saying the door is open, walk through it.
The door is opening.
Is that what you're
saying? Opening. Yeah, but we're not just with Chicago Public Schools, or that's not dependent on Chicago Public Schools, because we have a product that we feel is really
nationwide
and it's good for all our kids. So one of the things we do is go around to other states, to their black expos, to their educational conferences and things like that, and we present our material, and we have been received warmly. Because first of all, they look at it, and the educators look at it and says, "Wow, look at this vocabulary."
Okay.
At first, when we first started, we didn't have audio CDs, and we would talk to parents about them and show the book. They said, "Oh, this is too hard for my child. There's too many words." So we listened to them, and then we say, "Okay, let's go back and make the audio CD." Not only pronouncing the words for the children and stuff like that, but she's also modeling for them how to read.
I get
you.
I understand.
So when they begin to read and read with fluency and stuff like that, they would be able to do the inflections and things like that to show understanding of what they're reading rather than just word attack skills.
I understand perfectly. This is Sonya Perdue with Chicago's Black Business Network.com, and you're listening to CBBN on Blog Talk Radio. Our guest this evening is Mr. Robert Earl Lewis, who, with his wife, is the co-owner of All for Kids Enterprises. All for Kids are producers of the Urban Kids I Promise series, Story for the Urban Kids. And I'm so glad that you decided to join us, Mr. Lewis. It's wonderful talking to you. And that's what we do at Chicago's Black Business Network. We share information and we learn. Now, this is what I want to share this little story with you, because I was listening to what you said about you didn't have the the CD in the beginning, the audio version in the beginning, and the words were too hard for the children. Well, my brother and sister, I have a brother and sister who are a year apart. So my brother went to school, and my sister stayed at home, right? So then when he learned how to read, because he was very fast. I mean, he was just so smart. He went to he started learning how to read. As a matter of fact, before he went to school, he taught himself how to write. Don't ask me. He just started taking paper and started writing. He would copy the letters. He was mimicking it. He didn't know what it was, but he was writing it. So when he went to school, he started learning how to read. When he came home from school, he would read to my sister. My sister would memorize what he was saying. So one day she was sitting down with the book, and she was going through it like she could read. And my mother thought she could read. She could not read. She was memorizing what she was saying, what he was saying to her. And she was going through the book like she could actually read the book. So I guess the audio is a very important part of what you're doing, you know, the reinforcement on it, correct?
Right. And then that helps enhance that reading readiness. So like you were saying, the sister is mimicking the brother, but eventually she's going to be able to have that correspondence between the word and the sound, and then the understanding. All of that's going to come, but it starts off oftentimes by memory.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely. And
I thought, because, you know, I learned how to read from my older brothers. I have two older brothers, and they would come home and they would read, and I was mimicking them. That's part of it. And
that's right.
That's a beautiful part of it.
It is, too. It helps a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, our younger siblings should be smarter than the older ones, shouldn't they? We think so. They got that extra head start on them.
Let's put it this way. They get it sooner.
They do, don't they?
Because they have been, and the key word, they've been exposed at an earlier age.
Absolutely.
For example, in one of our books, it's called Dreams Can Come True. That's one of the books in our informational series. And that's a careers education guide for young children. And it's pretty extensive. And one thing we have in there that no other book has is at the bottom of the page, it tells you how much training you need for that vocation. Now, here's the story that, you know, I tell from time to time when we're out there in another city, another state. I would say that when they're looking at that particular book, I said, you know what? I'm so proud of this book because I used to tease my eighth grader students with it. I would go to a person and say, Johnny, I'm so proud of you. I've watched you grow. And sometimes I knew your parents because I was there for 37 and a half years. I watched you grow. And you just turned out to be such a fine young man. And I know when you graduate from college, hint, hint, that you're going to send me an invitation to your graduation. Don't be mad at me if I don't come with a shirt, because I'm going to be so proud, I don't think I can hold the buttons. So I'm going to have to wear a sweater.
Okay.
I said, but I just got one question to ask you. And they said, what's that, Mr. Lewis? I said, what's a paleontologist? And he would just look at me. Now, we've taught our children all about archaeology, but not about a paleontologist.
I get it.
And so I said, there's nothing wrong with you. That's our fault. We didn't expose you to it.
I got you.
Then I turned to that page, which is page 16 in The Dreams Can Come True, and it has paleontologists, and it explains what a paleontologist is and what he does. And at the bottom of the page, it tells you how much training you need. I say, my wife is downstairs right now teaching it to her second grade students.
Wonderful.
And they was, oh, Mr. Lewis, you're kidding. I said, no. We found out we made a mistake by not exposing you, and we're trying to correct it. We have to expose children at an early age. They look like little human beings, but they're nothing but eyes and ears soaking up everything in their environment.
You
good
know what,
or bad.
Lewis,
mm-hmm.
I think one of the most powerful things that you've just said, that people will not admit that they made a mistake, that they made a mistake, and let's correct it instead of just keep going in the same direction. I think that's powerful, very powerful. We forget how smart they are and how much they could take in and what they could accomplish at a very, very young age. We did. And it wasn't given to them. And you was part of, you know, you were in the administration, and you know it, you saw it. And we're not saying, we're putting the blame out there everywhere. And I like the way that you put that. I'm learning from that. I like the way that you put that. But they won't admit they made a mistake. Yeah, there were mistakes made. They were. And let's correct them. I like that. I'm going to use that a lot, Mr. Lewis. I'm going to use that a lot. I like that so much. Tell us this. We have another guest on, and we could do this again. And I love this. Give our listeners your website and your contact information first. So we're going to post it on our Blog Talk Radio page, and we're going to be sure that we send an e-blast out to our members. So give us your contact information, Mr. Lewis.
Okay, our website. It's allforkidsenterprises.com. All the numeral for kids is spelled KIDZ enterprises.com. Our email is cherryad@comcast.net. And our phone number is 708-922-3371. Oh, and I forgot. I was talking about our newest book, but
okay,
we now have on DVD those 12 life lessons for kids.
Oh, so, wow.
So for the preschool child who's not ready to read, we have it on a video DVD.
That's wonderful. Oh, great. You guys working very hard over there. Now, I want to thank Mommy Edie Armstrong for her patience, but I do want to ask you one more question, Mr. Lewis, and I want us to do this again. It's actually been a real pleasure talking to you. And you are a Chicagoan, right? A long-time Chicagoan in the Chicago area?
Born and raised. Yes.
You know our website and this show is dedicated to Mayor Harold Washington. Tell us how you remember Harold Washington.
Oh, my goodness. Harold Washington, this person who really gave me a different outlook on politics, because I was raised to believe that all politicians were crooked, and what you need to do is stay away from them because this politics is dirty. Harold Washington came along, a man of distinction, and a man of integrity, a man of substance. I went crazy for him. I was off and down. You see me on the L's. You see me down. I was downtown. Corporate people going to their jobs in the morning or leaving in the afternoon. I'm passing out information about Harold Washington. Harold Washington, there's none like him. My favorite aunt was a Jane Byrne person, and I thought that I was going to have to sever all ties with her. But in the end, she saw for herself what I would have been talking about.
Okay.
And she came aboard. And he is the reason that I went all out for Barack Obama. Because to me, Barack Obama is almost an embodiment of Harold Washington. I worked for Harold. I did all I could for Harold. Harold, if he had lived, Chicago would be the greatest city in the United States, because he had so many great ideas for this city. He loved Chicago and its people. He was a people person. And if he had lived, there'd be no end to where Chicago would be now. We probably would have no gangs. and that's a big statement. Because he was the type
statement.
Of person. Yeah, because he was the type of person who instituted different types of groups that I had to go out there and work with them to show them that, no, you are part of this process, and you're important to this process. We're reaching out to you to become, for you to get to understand stand up. You're nothing but a diamond in the rough. We want to get stand you up and clean you off and let you be part of us. This is the type of person he was. And this is how I'll always remember him. And then when I was principal of the school I was at, I had been going down south to Springfield trying to get funds for Chicago. I was going down there for 15 years, falling on deaf ears. So one day I saw Emil Jones and said, Emil, because I know Emil. I see Emil. Okay, you're now the Speaker of the Senate, President of the Senate, and you say you're the educational senator. Do something for Chicago. And if you can't do it for all Chicago, I got, what's it called? Anyway, I said, if you can't do it for Chicago, do it for my school. He said, Lewis, you're not in my district. You got this new person who just was elected in your district, and his name is Barack Obama. I'm going to give you his phone number. And I said, Barack, who? And he gave me the phone number. 2 days later, Barack Obama was at my school, went to all four buildings. At that time, we had 1,600 students, four buildings. Went to all four buildings, talked to students, talked to parents, talked to other teachers that came back with me, sat down in the library and said, Mr. Lewis, how can I help you? I almost fell out my chair.
You were overwhelmed, weren't you?
He reminded me of Harold Washington.
I understand.
And so when he decided he was going to run for president, I went crazy again.
Went on, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
That's a wonderful story, Mr. Lewis. Absolutely. And you promised to come back again. It's been a wonderful experience listening to you and meeting you and talking with you. And you see, you just never know. We all connected, and we got to do this thing together, Mr. Lewis. We appreciate you so much.
Okay, apologize to your other guests for me being so long-winded, but I get so wrapped up in what I'm doing and what I'm saying. I'm just an advocate for children.
It's wonderful, and so is Mama Edie Armstrong. She's sitting there listening to you. She's listening to us, and
well,
that's
Mama,
what she does.
I'm sorry.
You say you're sorry, Mama Edie. Say sorry, but no need to be sorry. You share some great things with us. That's why we're here. That's why we're connected. And I'm going to have you back again, and we're going to do some things with you, your wife, and Chicago's Black Business Network. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you, Ms. Frill.
You can stay on the line if you have time. If not, be sure to come back again.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay,
that'll be fine. We appreciate that. This is Sonya Perdue, Chicago's Black Business Network.com. You are listening to Mr. Robert Earl Lewis. Wonderful guest. I'm so glad that we connected. He and his wife are the co-owners of All for Kids Enterprise. Thank you so much. We're going to go to our guests right after this.
In honor of our seventh year in business, LaDivas of Chicago Catering, that's www.ladivas.com, that's LEDIVAS, would like to offer a 30% discount off all our goods and services for parties of 25 persons or more. In addition, LaDivas Catering is offering an additional 10% discount off all parties of 100 persons or more for a total of 40% off. These offers cannot be used in combination with any other offer. These offers expire on September 30th, 2009. So call us now at 773-536-5432. That's 773-536-5432. Today's message was brought to you by www.ladivas.com.
Just to tell you no lies, what we
We're back, and this is your host, Sonya Perdue. You're listening to Chicago's Black Business Network on Blog Talk Radio. That was one of our supporters, LaDiva's Catering Service. The owner, Hussein Hill, is a CBBN member. Please call them for all of your catering needs. LaDiva's Catering Service has extended their offer in the ad until December 31st, so call them today. We are really hearing some great things about their food and service. You also heard Can We Change the World, performed by VVAA. Our call-in number is 347-326-9477. We're going to go right to our phone line. Our phone line is professional storyteller Mommy Edie Armstrong is ready to join us. We want to thank you and our listening audience for being so patient. Mommy Edie, are you on the line?
I am on the line. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear. How are you today? You've had a busy day.
Oh, yes, ma'am, I did. But I'm doing fine. And I hear you sound like you're in rare form, too.
Thank you so much. That's what we do. We go from morning to night.
And if you don't mind, I need to, especially if the brother, Robert Earl Lewis, is still on the line, I did have to chuckle. You knew I was chuckling because you know I can go. And when he was apologizing for taking up so much time, and I tell you, brevity is not my strong suit either. And he owes me no apology.
Yes, ma'am.
And
yes.
I appreciate very much his passion He's passionate about what he's doing, and so he's excited about it, and he wants to share it. He wants people to know because he knows that people need to know, and that's a good thing. You know, we've got a lot of people who see things in terms of black and white and good and bad and up and down, and there's just a whole lot to be said for just being passionate about what you believe in, because within that lies the drive for you to push for and to establish what you know needs to happen in order for us, like the song was saying, to change the world. And we can change the world. We just got to believe that and be passionate about it and roll on.
And you're absolutely correct. And it was a pleasure talking to Mr. Lewis. And when I spoke to Mr. Lewis was very laid back because I couldn't tell what kind of guest he was going to be. He was so laid back. So I had like 30 questions to ask. And I said, because he's just not going to talk, you know. But once he got to going, he told his story. It is about passion. It is about passion. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to look at the questions anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that in them. Let's talk about you, Mommy Edie Strong. Tell us a little bit about you in a capsule. Then we're gonna talk about the storytelling, and we want to talk about the business of storytelling. So tell us about you first.
Well, basically, I am the youngest of four children, brothers and sisters, several years older than I. My first home was in Bronzeville on 43rd and St. Lawrence, and my mother had rheumatoid arthritis and could not walk, and I'd never seen her walk unaided, and I mentioned that because she is the source, one of the main sources, in addition to my sister, of whatever strength it is that I have. She was one of my greatest examples of strength in the face of adversity. And despite the fact that she was confined to her bed for many years and often in a lot of pain, she was a gracious lady. And she was always generous and kind. And everybody loved her. Everybody called her mama. And she was one of the best all-time storytellers that I ever knew. And she told me stories about things that happened a long time ago. And my dad, too. Now, my dad, big kudos go to my dad. This was a man who worked two jobs. He was one of the first black men who was hired on at the post office and was very proud because he was working at the big post office downstairs, you know, reputed to be the largest postal station in the world. And, you know, when working at the post office for a black man in those days was a big deal.
Absolutely.
My parents were born in 1911. And so we talking about a minute ago. And he also worked at the Sherry Hotel, a hotel that used to be in Hyde Park, which no longer exists. But here we were, six of us, four children and two parents, living in a one-bedroom apartment on 43rd and St. Lawrence. All four children slept in the only bedroom. We had bunk beds, twin size, of course. My two brothers slept in the top bunk. My sister and I slept in the bottom bunk, and we had one closet. Now, don't ask me where all the clothes went. I don't know. But and my parents stayed in the dining room. That was their bedroom. And I tell you, there was so much love and so many stories that could be told about the things that happened in that house, on that block, stories that they told us about things that used to happen a long time ago. I remember, in addition to hearing stories about the race riot of 1919, my mother was there over on 31st Street Beach when the young brother swam to the proverbial wrong side of the lake. Now, how do you swim to the wrong side of the lake, you know, crossing this imaginary line and what have you when the race riot broke out and what have you, and Mama was there, and she was able to tell me stories about situations like that, and Daddy was able to tell me about situations of being in Indiana which many of us are aware used to be the national seat for the Ku Klux Klan, and are uncomfortable with the idea of just how close that was to Illinois. But, you know, told me about experiences of, you know, seeing water fountains that said colored only and white only and what have you. And my mother had this huge hope chest that was kept for her trousseau. She kept all of her towels and linens and all the things that she wanted to save for when she got married in this hope chest. And I have it now, but it's a beautifully, beautifully crafted hope chest. And with my being the youngest of all the children, when everybody else was gone to school or gone to the army or wherever they were, Mommy would tell me sometimes, "Edith, go to the hope chest and look in the left-hand corner and get me that box that has a little pink ribbon tied around it and bring that here. There's some things that I want to show you." Oh, my God. I would open up that pink ribbon and take off that top, and it was like we were taking a trip back in time. The things that came out, the pictures that she showed me, the stories that went with the pictures, the garments, the lace, the dresses that she used to wear to fancy balls and things like that. And ironically, with her having lost the ability to walk, she and my father were reputed to be some of the best ballroom dancers in Chicagoland. They used to say when Jack and Chris got out on the floor that everybody stepped back because they really knew how to cut a rug.
Okay.
But that's the beginning, well, of this lifetime of my story. And it has helped me to be where I am and who I am today. And I'm grateful to have had some of the best parents that have graced this planet, and brothers and sisters as well. I'm blessed to have been in the family that I'm in, and I got a lot of stories just about them that I could tell.
Just about that. And that's, and it's an element, and I'm not saying absolute, I don't speak in absolutes, but I listened to your story, and the element that's missing a lot, that we're not creating memories and story. Remember when I said to take the children out to Can TV on Saturday?
Mm-hmm.
That's creating a memory.
That's
creating
right.
A story for them to recall
that's
when they're
right.
Our ages. And that's one thing.
Exactly right.
It's a missing element, because when they look back to their childhood, and it's a problem too, and we can talk about that forever, but when they look back to their childhood, what will they see? What will they remember? What will be the experiences that stand out in their life? What will be their stories? That's a very, very, very important thing. Mama Edie, let's talk about storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about storytelling. And I don't need to ask you any questions. You just tell me about storytelling.
Well, there's so much that you can say about storytelling. I think when I was thinking about this program, I had to think about, well, considering that I didn't know just how limited our time would be. I knew you had other guests and what have you. But so looking at some of the things that are most important to me about storytelling is what
That's
I'd like
great.
To share with you tonight.
We can start.
And,
we
don't have time for all of those either, but you know, I'll try to hit on a couple of them. First of all, let me say that when we were talking about the brother Joe Morton, who did the performance of the Invisible Man, and I was telling you that I did the prologue to the Invisible Man in intercollegiate competition when I went to Northern Illinois University. I was at Northern between 1969 and 1973, and my speech coach at the time was Dr. Ann Jeanette McFarlane. And I credit her largely for giving me the faith in myself to believe that I could interpret material in a way that would have meaning for other people. And so, in other words, it doing prose and poetry and storytelling, being musicians, it's a bonding force. It's a bonding force that has the potential to pull us together in healthy ways. But language and the power of the word also has the power to destroy us. And that's why we have to be very, very careful of it. And sometimes we can get caught up in other people's agendas and what's important to other people. Dr. McFarland was the one who taught me after I bombed out in my very first competition, and I had come up with a story to tell for a competition that I didn't even like. But people used to tell me that I was comical, so I figured I'm supposed to do something funny, right? Well, I also knew that the majority of the people in these competitions were white. So I called myself picking something that I thought white folks would like. Well, the thing is, it didn't really have any meaning for me. It didn't touch me. It didn't move me. And Dr. McFarland asked me when we came back, and I'm got my head all hung down, feeling like I let her down, and she asked me, she said, what was that about? You know, and why did you want to...
What was wrong with
you? She was very frank, you know, she said... He said, why did you choose that piece? And I said, well, I thought they would like it. And she said, well, did you like it? And I said, not especially. So she said, let me ask you something. She said, what do you care about? I said, what do I care about? She said, yeah, what do you care about? And consider the times. I told you I was there in school between 1969 and 1973. I said, well, I care about the Vietnam War. I care about all these brothers who were so frustrated with having to be in a war, coming back on drugs to turn around and get put in prison, get in jail, because now they got a habit that they can't support. I care about the fact that students were killed at Kent State and Jackson State because they were standing up for what they believe in. I care about the fact that we have so many universities that don't honor our presence in the university and our parents' tax dollars enough that they provide us with the kind of books and research information that we need in order to study and learn about us. And, oh, I went on and on and on. I didn't know I cared about so many things. And she just sat there with this wise little smile, and she just listened. And when I was done, she just nodded her head, and she said, those are the things that you should talk about.
And then
I
you
said,
knew.
Oh. And then I knew. And
then you knew.
She's the one who taught me to go inside myself and to find what was important to me and to honor it enough to give voice to it. And that's one of the most crucial things that has served me and carried me in my life. I'd like to say that and want to give big kudos to her for that. And we are still friends today. She started the Black Storytellers of San Diego the same year that Kuchai Brownlee, she's another storyteller here in Chicago, we got together a meeting of Chicago folk at one of the conferences, one of the national conferences of the National Association of Black Storytellers that was held in Orlando when we were, and we were there primarily to honor the memory of, oh, Lord, I'm blanking on the sister's name now. Wow, I've never forgotten her name. It's going to come back to me in a minute. But
okay.
Zora Neale Hurston.
Okay.
And so we pulled some folks together, and I suggested to talk about the idea of starting a local storytelling organization. And I suggested to Angie, to Dr. McFarland, I said, well, listen, since we're pulling together the Chicago folks, and it's just you, you know, and I think she had one other sister with her, from San Diego. I said, why don't you all come to our meeting, since we both want to start up an affiliate of this national organization, and we can share ideas together and help each other get off the ground. And so that was the way it happened. So we had that meeting. That's been, what, 11, 12 years ago now? And now we are both, we both became, within the next year or so, we both became official affiliates of the National Association of Black Storytellers. And in fact, that organization just hosted the 27th, I believe, annual storytelling festival this past weekend, this past week in Little Rock, Arkansas. And at that time, particularly the history that Little Rock played with the Little Rock Nine and so many things that happened during the civil rights movement, you know, was honored. I was unable to go, you know, for a couple of major reasons, but I heard from email and telephone calls that it was really, really very wonderful. And if I may use this reference to history in Little Rock as a segue to another thing that I care a lot about, is the fact that Brother Robert Earl had mentioned in his interview a little while ago that we've got generations of folks who made mistakes. Many of us have made mistakes by not exposing our children to so many things that they needed to be exposed to. One of the things that we have not exposed our children to enough has been an appreciable sense of our own history, of our own cultural history. And we understand that in a lot of cases that happens because our parents, people who, like my parents' age and what have you, I mean, we are folks who are from the Great Migration. You know, that was the generation. You know, these were the generations of the Great Migration, of black folk moving to the North, trying to escape Jim Crow laws and trying to find decent jobs and housing and the right to vote and so many things. And we know for a fact that many of the challenges, the trials and tribulations and the horrors, if you will, of many of those circumstances, many of our ancestors did not want to burden. In their minds, they were burdening the younger people. They didn't want to burden us with the realities and the graphics of some of the circumstances that occurred at that time, because they wanted to just leave it behind and just go ahead on and get your education and life is going to be better now. You know, we were moving on to the kingdom. Well, while we may be able to appreciate the intent, what happened was that it contributed to a disconnect. You cannot, in my opinion, you cannot, in fairness, look at a generation of young people and criticize them for not appreciating the sacrifices that had been made so that they could have a better life, when we ain't told them about the sacrifices that were made to create them a better life.
When we pretend there was no pain, we pretend that everything is okay and it's all right. And
exactly.
We're going to work and we're not talking about it. We're covering up the pain, because they did. And they
exactly.
do. And they cover up the pain and the shame and the whole thing. I want to talk to you about that. I do want to ask you something, because I want to, and then I want to come back, and I hope we don't forget.
Sorry. Before I forget, may I just mention this real quick? Because specifically related to the history, I need to mention that there was a book that was just published this year called Literacy in the Storytelling Classroom. And the editors are Sherry Norfolk, James Stinson, and Donna Washington. Donna Williams. And they had invited me to submit a story, an article for the book, because I'm all, in addition to being a professional storyteller, I'm also a speech and language pathologist. And so I've been doing workshops on the use of storytelling through the use of storytelling in order to develop language skills and literacy skills and all that kind of thing. So one of the things that I noticed, though, when they sent out the listing of the different articles that were included already in the book, I mentioned that they didn't have anything in there about history. So I said, well, you don't have nothing in there about history. They said, well, you got anything about history? I'm like, well, sure. And so I have two articles in that book. And I think it's crucial because one of the major points that I made in the book, when I was a child, I did not like history. I didn't like geography. And I believe that it was primarily because it was presented in a way that I felt no sense of connection.
It was boring, Mama Edie. It was dry.
And but I felt even if it had been boring, but I felt a sense of connection to some of the people or events in it. It might have given it some value to me if I could have seen a reflection of myself in some of the people who they held up and said, these are the wonderful greats of the world. It might have had some value and some merit to me. But none of that was happening. And then it was boring. So I didn't like history. So I know that in order for our children to have a healthy sense of history, we have to present it in ways that are engaging, number one, so that it won't be boring. But what part of what's going to make it engaging is that it be presented in a way that will give the children a sense of connection to that history so that they can see themselves within that continuum and know that they, too, have a place and will be making contributions to the future. Without that history, without that knowledge of themselves and who they are and an understanding, see, those stories that our parents and grandparents held back from us, yes, they were sad, but they also hold the key to the kind of strong stuff that we're made of. And we need to know that in order to move through some of the challenges that we have today.
Absolutely. Now, let me ask you this, Mama Edie, and talking about the history. And if I look, and as you say this, I'm reflecting back to my years in grammar school. All my teachers were black, except maybe one.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe quite possibly from me, you know, looking back and the way they taught the history and geography, they felt the same disconnection, so they could have no passion about it. They didn't feel connected to the stories, so the stories that they were forced to teach us, they couldn't pass on any enthusiasm about it either, because I don't recall them being interested in it either. It's just, I got
to
do
another
this.
Class that's
lesson plan
teach.
Here.
Right.
I got to do this lesson plan. That's it. Let me get through it. This is it. Write this. Go. Let's get finished with this part. So they themselves probably felt the disconnection, you know, from what I'm looking at and from what I'm recalling. So they couldn't be enthusiastic about it. And to tell you the truth, did they even know themselves? I mean, they may have had experiences, but you know, Mama Edie, they didn't know the history themselves. I'm not going to say all of them, but I'm going to say most of them. They didn't know the history themselves. They didn't understand the history themselves. So they couldn't bring it forth to us. They did what they were given, and they gave it to us, and we went forth with it and repeated it, that type of thing. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. And that word passion that I used referring to Brother Robert Earl Lewis earlier, how you going to have passion about something you don't understand and that you don't think is important? You can't be passionate about it. And if you can't be passionate about it, you're not going to pass it on with any sense that can be appreciated.
Well, as a matter of fact, the history is that applicable to them. They weren't talking about them. You know, how many sentences? The history that they were teaching was not applicable to them.
How many sentences in our history class was about them? It wasn't. It wasn't about them at all. So it didn't apply to them, not at all. I'm going to give you an opportunity to come back to that, if you wish, to language and literacy development. I'm going to give you an opportunity to come back to that, because that's what Robert Earl was doing. He's connecting the language and the literacy development through the storytelling. Exactly.
That sounds like wonderful programs. Mm-hmm.
He's doing it. He's doing it, and that is wonderful. I did want to ask you, because I want to share this with my people, before I forget too, I have a short-term memory there. Chicago Association of Black Storytellers. What's your membership over there? And how? And they would need to get in contact with you. What's your membership of that organization over there?
Well, first of all, let me give you the complete name of the organization. It's called
ASHE.
Ashe.
Okay.
And the first word is actually a Yoruba term that comes from the Yoruba people of Nigeria, West Africa. In Yoruba, it's spelled A-S with a dot up under it and an E. For the English eye or the English ear, it would be A-S-H-E, Ashe. And Ashe is a term that basically means, it's often used as we use amen. It's an affirmation, and it affirms that there's power in what was just spoken. And so the full name of the organization is ASHE, the Chicago Association of Black Storytellers. And ASHE. And the membership, I think we're somewhere at around 20, 22, something like that right now. And incidentally, we have, there is a worldwide celebration of storytelling that was initiated by the National Storytelling Network, which is based in Jonesboro, Tennessee. And incidentally, they also, a few years ago, established a partnership with Eastern Tennessee State University, I believe, where they have a master's degree program now in storytelling. And there is another effort that has been initiated by Baba Jamal Karam of Virginia to also institute. In fact, it's already begun. There have been annual gatherings, storytelling retreats, to train people in the specific art of black storytelling, because we do have some unique differences that are different ways that we express ourselves as compared to people from other cultures. And so ASHE, in conjunction with this celebration, which is a worldwide celebration of storytelling, this happens in the same weekend all over the world. Storytelling guilds and organizations have been asked to organize storytelling events. And the one for ASHE happens to be coming up this weekend and is free. Isn't that wonderful?
And, that is wonderful.
And if I may, it's going to be hosted on the Dulles Elementary School. John Foster Dulles School of Excellence is hosting us. And that school is located at 6311 South Calumet. It is this Saturday. I know this Saturday is going to be a busy day. This Saturday, November 21st, from 1 until 2:30. And the address of the school, again, is 6311 South Calumet. So if people would like further information about that, they can call that same sister I was telling you about earlier, Kucha, who we called that first meeting together for our organization. Her number is 773-722-9786, or Dolores Gordon, and she is the chairman of our program committee, and her number is 773-723-0322. So, again, it's free. The MC is Oba William King. We have Dolores Gordon will be featured, Alice Collins, Baba Tony Brown, Zara Baker, and Emily Hooper, who perform as In the Spirit, and a sister who opened the door for many of us by the name of Shanta, and we're 30-plus year friends. Shanta left Chicago for a while and lived in Las Vegas, but she's back. And she's a powerful and insightful and loving storyteller. And we also have youth. We started a youth storytelling component where young people come to us every third Saturday of the month. We've been hosted at a church. I can't think of the name of it right now. I think it's Christ the Mediator. I think it's Christ the Mediator at 31st and Calumet. And we have our meetings at Christ the Mediator. There, the storytelling training for the youth has been at King Library on 34th and King Drive. So it's all right there in the same neighborhood. But
okay.
So our children who have been trained, and many of them came to us. They all came to us talented already. So those who've been working with the youth have just nurtured that talent, and they are also going to be featured. Our MC will be Oba William King. It should be really, really very wonderful. And then the next day, now I'm going to be of support to that one. The next day, though, I will be featured at a celebration that's hosted by a woman, Judith Heineman, who has the Chicago Storytelling Guild. And this is her 13th annual celebration. I was in her first one, I think, years ago. And some of our members from Ashe will also be featured in her particular storytelling event. Hers is going to be Sunday, November 22nd, at the Experimental Station at 6100 South Blackstone. And there are two programs. The family program is from 3 to 5. The adult concert is from 6:30 until 9. Now, these events, the celebration events, are typically requested to be free events. So if you don't have money, it's fine. But sometimes, in order to offset expenses, people may, you know, suggest a donation. So the suggested donation for this event is $5. But if a person didn't have it, they wouldn't be turned away. And for more information for that one, a person could call 773-288-7217.
This is a lot of information. This is what I need for you to do for me. Whenever you catch your breath, maybe tomorrow, send me an email, okay,
mm-hmm.
with that information in it, and I'll put out an e-blast to the members.
Okay.
It's short term, but I will still put it out there. Lot of things going on, a lot of storyteller things. Tell me this, Mama Edie, what makes a storyteller? What is the definition of a storyteller?
Ooh.
I mean, I'm a storyteller. What is that?
Well, you know, there's so many ways to look at that, because you've got, first, on one level, we're all storytellers, because anytime you call up your girlfriend on the phone and say, "Girl, do you know who I saw last week?" And guess what she said? That's a story. So we're all storytellers on that level. And then there is the storytelling that is the intent to pass on information in an engaging way, specifically pass on information in an engaging way, to teach a lesson, to teach a moral, to inspire somebody, to encourage somebody, to lift somebody up. Those kinds of storytellers can be found in churches or in schools or on your front porch or in your backyard or at the grocery store, the beauty shop, the barber shop, you know, at the car mechanic place. So, and then there are professional storytellers who get paid. Professional storytellers get paid by definition.
That's the difference. Is that the
hello
right there?
Hello. Well, that's one of them. That's one of them. But a professional storyteller not only gets paid, but a responsible professional storyteller is one who holds himself or herself to a certain standard of service. So that is to say that, for one thing, not only do you want to feel confident that you can provide a valuable service, that you have some skills, that you're somewhat good at what you do, but you want to be on time, you want to be reliable, you want to be honest, and things like that. You want to know how to run your business. And this is one of the situations with a lot of people. People often talk about how artists can be wonderful at what they do with their art, but they don't know beans about business. Well, first of all, it doesn't apply to all artists, but it does apply to a good number.
Yes,
but
it does.
The other thing is that it doesn't only apply to artists either. How many times have we known people who were really, really good cooks? You come over to their house and they could burn. Everybody in the neighborhood want to come when so-and-so is making their favorite pot of whatever. And then because they're so popular among their family and friends, they decide they're going to open a restaurant. But they haven't researched the restaurant business. They don't know what's involved. They don't know what it will take. Brother Robert Earl was saying earlier, and I love him and his wife for doing this. This is one of the things that I focus on a lot, is in having, I try to encourage parents when I do speech and language development workshops or communication workshops for parents and teachers and seminars and educational conferences and things like that, I'm encouraging people to have conversations with their children. And conversations won't be defined or limited to do this, do that, don't do this, don't do that.
Absolutely.
And within an unfortunate number of households, if I were to ask parents, do you talk to your kids? Oh, yeah, I talk to them all the time.
and what they're doing, they're talking at them.
They're talking at them. They're just telling them what to do, what not to do, go get me this, go get me that, and that kind of thing. But they're not asking them things like, we've got this situation here in the family now, and what do you think about it? What do you think we should do? How does this make you feel? There's a decision to be made. If I make this decision, how is that going to set with you? You know, how will you adjust to it? Those kinds of things. And I'm not suggesting that we ask our, you know, we ask our children to make our decisions that need to be adult decisions in terms of what we should do with our families, but I think that it's a good thing for them to know that they have a voice, that there's somebody who's willing to listen to what it is that they have to say, who acts like they care, that they are part of the family. It helps them feel like a visible part of the family. And lack of visibility is one of the main anomalies that we have going on today. A lot of our children don't feel visible, and then they grow up into adults who don't feel visible.
They talk about the self-esteem, and that's where it comes from. How can you feel? You have no feelings. I mean, you really feeling? They don't feel anything. They don't feel important at all.
They don't feel important. They feel something, but they don't feel like they matter. They don't feel like they're really there. They don't feel like they count. And so many of them will move into a, well, I'll show you mode. And then there it just opens up a whole bevy.
Whole new door. I want to ask you this, Mama Edie. This is what I want to do. We could do two parts because we need to go back. We need to go back to the healthy interpersonal communication skills. Mm-hmm. We need to talk about how it affects lifestyles, physical and verbal violence. We need to talk about that. But what I want to do also before we close, and times always go fast, especially when I'm having a great night, I want to bring you back, and I want to do it, you know, and I think it's best to do it in parts. I think I think I'm going to be more thorough on my shows and be very topic specific because you can go in deep to this, but I want you to meet
Robert Earl. He's on the line, and he's push number one, so I think he wants to speak with you. And I think I want you all to communicate these last 10 minutes. Is that okay with you?
Oh, that's perfectly fine. I'd welcome it, yes.
Okay. Mr. Lewis, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Good evening. How are you?
Okay. It's not that I wanted to talk with you. I'm just so captivated by your conversation.
Oh, my. Thank you.
And I'm thinking how we talk about the passion that I have, and I'm listening to the passion that you have. and it is just so wonderful. And I'm thinking about the possibilities of our paths crossing, because I went to the same colleges and things that you went to around the same time.
Okay.
And has undergone some of the same types of experiences with my family that you've undergone. And I'm listening to your stories, and I'm just relating to them, and I'm saying, this is so wonderful. How can this be packaged on a grand scale and given to our people?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Oh, do you want to hear something really, really that's going to get you excited? How about reaching into the deaf community? Uh-huh.
Right.
Now, you got a sister who knows a little sign language, yeah. And one of the things that I have not do, I am on some DVDs, some storytelling DVDs. They were produced under the Story Watchers Club. I happen to be the only African-American, though, on the set of five. But, you know, it's cool. They're good storytelling DVDs, and they're all about important things like our planet and folk tales from around the world and how to take care of character building and all those kinds of things. So it's a good set. It's a very good set. But one of the things that I personally want to do is to take some of my own stories, and I've been promised, although some of my stories, I've had stories published, Usaini Eugene Perkins, God bless him, of Hey Black Child fame, was the first person to ask me to do an article for a publication for his Black Child Journal. But I've wanted to have my own book, and I haven't somehow published my own book, but I'd like to do, I've got ideas in mind that we can talk about later on more in depth, but I'd like to not only publish a line of books based on a character, Bo Kalinda, who was inspired by a song that I learned when I was in Trinidad, and there's a story called Bo Kalinda, the Shrinking Girl, that I wrote a few years ago, and it basically tells the story of a little girl who was, I describe her as being, she had skin that looked like soft black velvet, and she had eyes that sparkled like the night sky, and she had a smile that, oh, it just made you feel good just to look on her. And I described her that way. I described her that way because I don't think we sing the praises of the skin tones, the darker skin tones of our beautiful people enough. And I think if we can sing those praises, then maybe they will see the beauty that some of us have been able to see. But this little girl, even though she was beautiful on the outside, sometimes she did some pretty ugly things, don't you know? So every time she said something mean to one of her friends, it seemed that she shrunk a little bit. So the story takes you through the experience of how she came to discover why she was shrinking, and it has something to do with the reflection that she saw one night when she was awakened by a voice coming from the mirror at the foot of her bed. And I'm going to leave you there with that cliffhanger. But
okay.
But what I'd like to do, I've got a series of stories in mind for Bo Kalinda, for this character, where she can teach so many different things through her own experiences. And at the same time, it would be a way of my introducing children to our Caribbean cousins. We got cousins within the African world, all over the world.
Yes.
Just because you know, folks in Puerto Rico speak Spanish don't mean that they ain't our cousins. They just got dropped off at another port. Just because folks in Haiti speak French don't mean that they ain't our cousins. They were forced to speak French because they were captured by the French. They are our cousins. We got cousins. We may be considered a minority in this country, but we are not a minority in the world. And there's a psychological power that comes with us feeling that we are a part of something huge and something potentially so great. And I'd like, through Bocalinda and through any of my other stories, to bring that forth, but I also don't want to leave out the deaf community. Subsequently, I want to have DVDs produced where we can also have the stories will be signed.
Yeah.
Where we could do the storytelling in sign language and in voice, and that's what I'd like to do. And I'd love, if you'd be interested in talking about that more later on, I'd love to explore that with you.
Certainly. It sounds so wonderful.
I'm going to, this is Sonia Perdue, Chicago's Black Business Network, and you're listening to CBBN on Blog Talk Radio. Our guest this evening, Mr. Robert Earl Lewis, owner of All for Kids Enterprise, and Mommy Edie Strong, professional storyteller. And what we're going to do, we want to thank all our listeners. We want to thank you for joining us. We have about 5 minutes left. This is what I want to do.
Can I print my last name?
Mama Edie, I'm strong.
Right, you said Mama Edie Strong. And I am strong, but it is Armstrong.
Yes, ma'am, it is. Mama Edie, I'm strong. Okay. This
Thank
is what
you.
I would like to do. I don't believe our circumstances come by mistake. You and Mr. Lewis are here for a reason. And I'm going to, you know, with everyone's permission, email, you know, the information back, the telephone contact information back, so that you can continue your communications.
Okay.
Now, I do hope that Mr. Lewis will take the time to come over and join us when he can. I know he has some things planned. And if he can come over and join us and start sharing, you know, what he does with our members, that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want to do also is break it up, because both of you will be back again, you know, if you wish to. This is what this venue is about. This is what we do. This is exactly what we do. My job is done today. Mama Edie Armstrong has met Mr. Robert Earl Lewis, and they're on an adventure together. That's how we do it here. And I'm satisfied with the process. In the last couple of minutes, Mama Edie, we're going to bring you back again. You're going to get to tell all those things. I mean, we're going to get to do them step by step. But you know what, too? I find as I learn this process, people can only take in so much information.
Mm.
Also, you know,
yeah.
So that's why I have to be very specific, topic specific about it. And I know we could go on and on and on. You know, you can do a 3-hour show, but we don't. That's
oh.
Okay. We're not going to do that.
You could do a course.
Yes, you could. A whole semester, a 4-year degree now, right?
That's
they got a 4-year degree for it now.
That's
we can
right.
do that.
That's right.
But you know, people can only take so much information. I like to be very specific because I really want people to know about the business of storytelling because they don't know about the
okay.
business of storytelling. They want to be storytellers. They go tell stories, but they don't know how to conduct their business. Like you talk about the restaurant business, and we're a business organization, and I want to have a show where we focus on that almost like a little lesson, okay?
Mm-hmm. If I could just hook this in, that I'll plant the seed with you now so maybe we can – include it later for people who are musicians. Could consider the blending of storytelling with music, which is traditional for us. And the group that I belong to, A Spiritual Journey, we're a percussion ensemble, and we do storytelling within the music. So there's so many possibilities. It's really,
girl.
Really limitless.
Oh, girl, yes, it is. Yes, it is. And we just have to keep on going and reaching out and bringing more people into the conversation, more people in the conversation, more people into the conversation, and that's how it's going to grow. You and Robert Earl Lewis and Mama Edie Armstrong, you've never met, but you've lived here, and you're about the same, you know, pretty much the same thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But your paths are not crossing, or they have, and you just don't remember it because they may have crossed somewhere before. But you don't know it,
And I like being a connector. That's what I call myself. I do that. Mm-hmm. I enjoy doing that very, very much. I just found out, it's a new discovery for me. I just found out that I really like that. And I do it well, don't I, must say myself.
Yes,
I
you do. Yes, you do. That's right.
I want to ask Mama Edie the same thing I asked you, Mr. Lewis, because we have 4 minutes left, and I'm going to give you two of them, Miss Edie, because I have to close out my show. Mama Edie, because I have to close out my show. How do you remember Harold Washington? You got 2 minutes.
Oh, well, actually, Brother Robert said a lot of what I would have said. I would say in a nutshell, I probably won't even need 2 whole minutes. I would say in a nutshell, he was next to Dr. Martin Luther King. Harold Washington gave me faith in what I had previously thought was impossible. To have a black man be elected to be the mayor of Chicago was just really, I mean, we think, these steps with Barack Obama becoming president and for Harold Washington to become the mayor of Chicago was phenomenal, purely, purely phenomenal. And one of the things that I appreciated about him was that from what I could see, and I believe that from what most people could see, he was his own man. And I respected him highly for that. I don't think he was able to be bought. And I respected him and I appreciated him for that, because we have far too many politicians who will say whatever they think they need to say in order to get in office. This is, of course, not to say all of them. We've got some wonderful civil servants. We do. There are some out there. But we have a bunch of others who get into office and it's all about ego, and it's all about self-glory. And Harold Washington, I believe if he had been able to stay in office, we would have been far, much farther along the road than we are now. And even the point that Brother Robert brought up about not having a gang problem anymore, I think with the worldwide thrust to make money and to lapse into a greed mode and to just have more and more and more and more and more and more and more by any means necessary, probably situations like having gangs are probably going to be around for a while, because they're the people who don't have a concept of enough. I call them overgrown adolescents. You know, we got a lot of overgrown adolescents in positions of power in the world.
Yes.
Who are in charge of entire countries, impacts, financial and economic impacts on corners of the world that we never even heard of before. And that causes trickle-down problems everywhere. But Harold Washington was tops. He was my man. He was his own man. And I will always appreciate him for that. I said I wasn't going to take up 2 minutes. I probably took 3.
And that's okay. Yeah.
Hold me back.
It's okay. In my last 30 seconds, I want to thank Mama Edie Armstrong and Robert Earl Lewis. And we're going to come back together again on a show, and we're going to talk about the business of storytelling and publishing. I want to thank both of you. Have been great guests. It's wonderful meeting you. And I'm going to send you both emails so that you can continue your dialogue. I appreciate you so much.
Thank you, Pete.
And please tell people about Chicago's Black Business Network.com. That is how we grow. I'm your host, Sonia Perdue. You're listening to CBBN on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you so much. We'll see you next. We'll talk to you next Tuesday, 7 p.m.
And see everybody in shape and young minds.
That's right. I hope so.
Yep.
We'll see you. We'll talk to you next Tuesday. 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Love you. Appreciate you every week for joining in. Good night, everyone.
We are appreciative of all of our friends, listeners, and members who joined us today. We welcome your thoughts and comments at cbbn@blogtalkradio.com. This is a learning process for all of us. Let's grow and learn together. You are surrounded by resources and tools to take you to the next level in life and business. You don't have to make the journey alone. Join us at chicagosblackbusinessnetwork.com and touch the world. The music in the opening announcement is Bass Vibes. The closing piece is Shades of Spring. Both were written and composed by Kevin McLeod and can be listened to in their entirety on our site. Thank you and have a wonderful night.